We're going to continue. We've talked about selectors and combinators. So now we've described what it is that we want to affect, but there are a myriad of ways that we can affect that thing. There are, you want to give me a guess as to how many CSS properties exist?
I wouldn't even begin to know.
Wild guess. We've used most of them, but
yeah, thanks for putting me on the spot.
There you go.
I can't even come up with a number.
Almost 300. Almost 300. And it depends, because there's vendor-specific ones, and, you know, and there's unsupported ones. And so it depends, but roughly 300 styles that can be applied to whatever you've selected with the techniques that I've just shown you. We're going to look at some of the color properties, because those come into play a lot. We're going to look at some text properties, so some ways that you can manipulate your text to make it look like the font that you want or whatever. And then the all-important box properties. Pretty much everything on the screen is a box. You've got divs, you've got tables. Even your paragraphs have a box around them.
Sure.
So we're going to look at the box model and some properties that we can use to control how and where things show up on our screen.
Cool.
Remember that CSS is not just making things pretty by changing their style. It's also really affecting our layout. It's the language that tells our elements where they're supposed to go. So if you're working on an app and you have kind of a general section on the left and a section on the right, it's the CSS that's going to describe that. That's what we're going to talk about in the either in the box properties or in the next module when we really dive into the layouts. All right, so the color properties. We used to be limited with the color properties that we specified a long time ago, like back when I was a kid. All we had was hex values. Now we've got, and there was really a recommended subset of colors that we were supposed to use because some people didn't have more than 16 colors on their computer or 256 colors. Those were the days.
Yeah.
Now everybody, you can assume, has the full color palette, and we've got multiple really powerful ways of describing color. And these show up in a lot of the different properties that I'm going to show you. You'll see them in changing the color of your text, in applying a border that's red, or in changing the background color of some div or the body or some element. So let's look at the different ways that we can change the color value. Let's jump back to that selectors demo on CodeShow. And instead of all this fancy selector stuff, let's just apply this to the paragraph so that we can see that. And we used a named color here. But I'm going to show you that there are a couple hundred, maybe 175 or so named colors that are specified in HTML. And some of them are real basic, like red or blue or green. We've got, you know, all the basics. We've also got some esoteric ones like goldenrod. That's a named color, totally valid color. I think there's light rye and desert sun and all kinds of weird ones like that. But you can look those up and you can feel free to use them or not. Another way to specify a color is with its hex value. So this is the geeky way to apply your color. It always starts with a hash, which just makes you feel like a geek right off the bat. And then you specify 6 hex values. So anything from 0 to F, right? And it starts with zeros. There's 6 zeros, and that's black, so it looks black. And then there's also 6 Fs. That's white, so it looks like it disappeared because it's white. Now, I don't know if you know this, but these are actually 3 pairs, right? You can't specify them separately like that, but those are 3 pairs. And if each of these pairs are identical, like in this case, then you can specify your hex value with simply 3 letters or 3 values. And it will assume that those are each repeated 2 times. Now, I have absolutely no reason in the world for that to be helpful. I have no idea why that's helpful, but... Now you know.
Save the typing for 3 characters.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't want our keyboards to wear out.
Right.
So we could do something like 00 for my red, 00 for my green, and FF for my blue, and we've specified blue. Or we could shorten that to 00F, and now I've specified blue. Hmm. Or 0F0, now I've specified green. So we've got named colors, hex colors, but, welcome to the modern era, we've got RGB colors. So obviously we're going to want to use something kind of powerful. We're going to want to specify any color in the rainbow. So we've got RGB. And this takes 3 RGB values between 0 and 255. So let's just use 0, 0, and 255 for blue. And let's make it green so that it changes. And there we go. We've made green. RGB is a 1 valid function. We've also got RGBA. Do you ever use these?
I have, actually.
Yeah.
They're very cool.
With RGBA, it's expecting 1 more value, and that is the opacity. So although this one's green, it is 50% opaque, which means that it's 50% transparent. And so we can fade that out even more by going down to 0.2. And you can see that my color is green, but it's letting the background come through it. There's also HSL. And with HSL, we are specifying the hue, which is a number from 0 to 255. And then the saturation. So let's call this one 50% saturation. So we need that percent sign. And then the lightness, which is the how much black value there is. So if we choose 0, which is red, then we can change the saturation and lightness to 50 and 50. And the nice thing about HSL is that as long as you keep this hue consistent, then you can just go change, for instance, the lightness, turn that down or up, and you've got values that are in this, basically in the same spectrum. You're keeping the same color. You're just changing how light it is or how saturated it is. Yep, and there is an HSLA as well, so you can add a fourth argument, and you can specify some opacity. Now, besides affecting the opacity through those functions, you can also affect the opacity directly with a different property. Opacity, colon, and then something like 0.5. So now this doesn't have a color besides black, the default, but it does have an opacity, so it's turned it down to a 50% gray. And it's not just a 50% gray, it's actually letting the white background show through and it's mixing it to what looks like 50% gray. So that's color and opacity. We're gonna see those all over the place. Whenever you see that a property takes a color value, this is what you're going to rely on, is what you learned here in the color values. But let's look at some text properties and see what we can apply to our text properties. So we've got some basic things like text decoration that you can underline, overline, strike through. Let me ask you this, Mr. Michael Palermo. Have you ever used overline?
I have never used overline.
I haven't either. I guess you'd have to be like a math wizard, or you'd have to need to add bars above things to use overline.
Yeah.
I've never used it.
Never used it.
But underline and line through are definitely handy. Underline we use all the time. And you may know, by the way, that HTML is capable of specifying a U tag as opposed to this. Now, why would I use text decoration underline when that's so much longer than just saying adding a U tag around something?
That's a good question.
I think that the reason is, instead of having this extra tag in there, I mean, you're still going to have to wrap it with a span or something like that. You've done it in a standard way, just like you specify all your other styles. And so you can always go change it behind the scenes with your
exactly.
JavaScript. Yep. Okay, we've also got text transform. These are pretty basic, so I'm not going to show these right away. Text transform allows you to take whatever text you have described in there in whatever case it is and change the case of it. So if you want your menus to be all uppercase, regardless of the way that the developers type them into the HTML, you would do a text transform to uppercase. Then you're not dependent on making sure that it's entered correctly in the HTML. We've also got a text shadow, and I noticed this one's one of your favorites. Do you want to show what the text shadow does?
Yeah, actually, why don't you open up your the code show?
Okay.
And go back to that CSS selectors
okay,
screen.
Okay, got it.
So if you wanted to apply a text shadow to any one of those elements, you pick one that you
think
is
good. Okay, let's do it to the table.
So inside, you would apply that text-shadow, colon, and then it's going to ask for a series of arguments. You know, it's going to want to know in what direction is the shadow going.
Okay.
And so a positive number for the first would either be or would be down, and then the next one would be over to the right. So why don't you put a simple one in there? Let's say 2px space 2px, and then the next value.
Whoa! I already see something happening.
Yes, you do. It's taking a default color at this time, which would be black. And it's applying that shadow right away.
But you're saying I can apply my own color.
You could right now, as a matter of fact.
And so how do I know what I can type for color?
Well, you just did it.
Anything, I already did. Let's do red.
Do red. So there you have your red. Now, what's awesome about text shadows is that you also have the ability to provide, let's say you have you can keep the 2px and the 2px there, but right after the second 2px, why don't you add a third one? 2px. Now, what that does is it adds the blur factor. You know, to what degree do you want that blur to extend? So if you actually look down below, you can see it's got that nice little blur feature there. Oh, yeah. So you can see it more. So you could increase maybe those text shadows to, let's say, 3 or 4px or so forth. And you'll start to see that the shadowing really takes place, and you get that nice blur. Now, here's something that is also very cool that you can do. If you go after the gray that you have,
okay,
and put a comma, now put 0 space 0 space, and do, let's say, 10 px. And do you see now what this did is it said we're not going necessarily in any one specific direction. We're going in every direction. Mm. And that's why you get the kind of get that glow effect. You still have the first one applied, that gray one. And now we just extended that shadow to have yet another one, which defaulted to black. So if you put in another color there, so you see how we
multiple shadows.
Multiple shadows.
How many can I do?
You could do as many as you want.
Can I do 75?
I've never tried, but why not?
I don't think we should take the time to do that now.
No. And also another thing to note about text shadows is that if you do put any of those numbers in the negative, let's say you go to the first 4px and you make that a negative, and then you do the same thing with the second one, what you're doing is you're changing the direction of the shadow.
Gotcha. All right. Man, that's cool. Way more powerful than what we used to have, which is kind of the theme of HTML5, CSS3, and ECMAScript 5. They're exciting. Okay, so those were some text properties. Also related to text is fonts, and there are a lot of font properties. These are interesting. If you look at the last one, it says font shorthand property, and I haven't talked about shorthand properties yet, but a shorthand property is just a way of saving the developer some keyboard wear. Right?
Sure.
So you could specify a lot of different properties, or you could just use the shorthand and specify multiple at a time, delimited by spaces. The font one is a little bit fickle. It actually wants style, variant, and or weight in some order, but they're also optional. And then you can specify size and line height with a slash in between them. And then you have to have font family. Okay, so it's a little bit picky as to the format that you put it in. So if you're going to specify them using the shorthand, you just need to know that. So let's go ahead and clear this and make everything in our table now. Let's set some of these individually. So the first one that we'll look at is this font style of italics, because that's a real common one. Font style italic. So now everything in my table is italicized. Not too difficult. I can change the variant to small caps. I'll skip that one in the interest of time. I can change the font weight, which is a very important one. And I can change this to, and again, my font one was not working for me earlier. I don't know what it is about my CSS. Let me just try this again. Let me try P, font, weight, bold. There we go. That's working. It was just acting goofy. Now, the bold one, by default, it's normal. But you can also say bold or bolder, and in this case it's not recognizing that, which is fine. You can also say lighter, and now you can see that font got a little bit lighter than normal. What you're really doing by specifying these shortcuts is specifying a font weight of anything from 100, which is the lightest, up to 900, which is the heaviest. And you can specify anything in between.
Cool.
So that's font weight. Font size and line height are pretty helpful. Font size is obviously going to be able to up the size of everything in there. Let's apply this just to the table. Yep, that works just fine. So that's a font size of 24 point. Now, we haven't looked at any length units yet, but you find length units all over the place, and it's really flexible as to what you put in there. I used points. I can also use pixels. I can also use 1 centimeter or, for instance, 0.5 inches. So there's a lot of different things that I could put in there for a length unit. But the line height actually allows you to do, so let's say, for instance, I had a font size of 24 pixels, and then I had a line height that was double that. So now I have double-spaced content. The font family, very interesting, because the font family requires that font be available on the user agent's machine. Okay, so you can use a common one like Trebuchet MS, and then it's going to apply that Trebuchet MS, because you know that if you know that Trebuchet exists on the client's machine. But if you don't know if it exists, we've got some really great advent in the latest CSS3, and that is the ability to define font faces. Now, when you define a font face, you do it like this. We're not going to take the time to look at it in an example, but with a font face, you get to specify a URL for a font that's in your project or that exists somewhere accessible, and you give it a font family name. So in this case, I've found the actual file of niftyn.woff, and I've given it the name of Nifty Font. And then later, I'm applying that to some element with the Nifty class, and I'm telling it I want to use the Nifty Font. Now I'm basically delivering a font. Now, have you seen the .woff before?
I have.
Yeah. WOFF is a great format because you're able to actually specify OTF, open type font faces, TTF. Those can be used, but there's some issues with those. First of all, it's difficult to keep DRM on your fonts if your company has some proprietary fonts. It's difficult to keep DRM on those, whereas WOFF will allow you, it actually is a wrapper around those other typefaces, and it allows you to keep those secure so you keep your IP.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's the font face. Now, columns. Really important for text is columns, especially in Windows 8.
Oh, yeah.
In Windows 8, you may notice that we very rarely pan vertically. Really, most of the time, we're panning horizontally, and we're on what we call rails. That means that we don't allow, you know, the user to accidentally bump the image up or down. It's locked horizontally. There's a number of reasons for that. The human arm actually moves side to side easier than it moves up and down. So this is a more natural movement. It's also the most common reading direction. And most of our displays, especially nowadays where we're at 16 by 9 most of the time, most of our displays have more room.
Yes.
Sideways. And it's also differentiating. It's just a Windows 8 character.
Sure.
Trait.
And I like the fact that you mentioned it was that natural arm movement because, I mean, we're getting into an age where a lot of the devices now are going to be touch screens. So we're going to want to apply that natural gesturing that people are going to want to do. And you think about reading a book. That's what you do.
That's
you turn
what
the
you
page
do.
Like that.
Yep.
So I really appreciated that graphic that you had on your screen talking about the old and the new. And I guess the old on that screen refers to what?
Yeah, can we get that screen up again? The old is, basically that's web pages, right? That's
exactly
what we see on web pages. The text, the column, that huge column is kind of monolithic. It's a little
right.
bit intimidating. But look at the opportunity for a little bit of creativity and design when you lay it out horizontally.
Sure.
But that horizontal layout requires that we have the ability to specify columns, and we haven't until this point. So I'm going to move just a little bit quicker, but I'm going to definitely show you column support here. Sorry, there we go. So columns in Code Show, you can go look at this one yourself. There's a demo that's called CSS Columns right here. So I open CSS Columns, and you can see that we've got exactly columns specified here. So I'm going to jump to the source code for Code Show, and I'm going to go to the columns. It's actually called CSS Columns. Thought. It's in the pages. Oh, I'm in the wrong source code.
Yeah.
That would do it. So we're going to go to CSS columns, and let's just look at the CSS, the HTML you can imagine. It's pretty straightforward. Here, we are specifying one simple property, that we want the columns to be 400 pixels. Now, we could also specify an integer value to specify how many columns we want instead of specifying their width. So let me pump it up to 8 columns. And then run Code Show. This is going to act differently now. Should run locally on my machine. Oh, it's running in the simulator, which is fine. And now you can see that we've got 8 columns instead of 4. And
cool.
So we can use either integers or the width. All right. Now, the next thing that I want to show you is the box properties, the all-important box properties. We've got border, margin, and padding are fundamentally the box properties that we're interested in. But there are a lot of things that kind of center around that. And to show you the box properties, I'm going to jump back to our, where am I going here? I'm going to jump back to, actually, I'm going to jump back to my Code Show project running not inside the simulator, but running on the local machine, because that's just a bit better experience. So let's run local machine, run that. Here we are, back. And into the selectors. There we go. Now, we have a lot of text in this example, but remember that text boxes are divs and they're boxes. They've got 4 sides and 4 corners like any box you'd expect. So let's look at the lorem box here, and let's go ahead and color that so you can see what we're dealing with. Now, I'm going to specify a margin around that box, all the way around that box, of 20 pixels. And you can see that it's added some space around that box. Interesting. Now, I could add a padding instead of a margin, and it's going to basically look the same there, because it's inside the div. It's a critical difference. And then I can add a border around that box, and for a border, I have to specify not only a size, so let's say 2px, but also a style, because there's different kinds of properties that you can use. I could use, for instance, dotted, but I'm going to use solid, and then a color. So let's just leave that black. We'll just leave that off. But let's go ahead and look at red. Ah, there we go. Okay, so let's do black. So now I've got a border around that. Now, it's important to know how these three things relate to each other, and for that we have the box model. Every box on your screen, all your divs, paragraphs, tables, all these things have content, which is this middle section here. This is the content. And then they have the padding specifier, the border, and the margin. And then the offset is just if you offset it and put it somewhere on the screen, that's outside of the margin. So it's important to know the order of those three things. And the thing that's really important to know is that when you change the size of your box, that only affects, by default, only affects this content box. Okay? And you have to be explicit if you want that to affect the whole box. So let's look at that. If I want to change the width of this box, let's go ahead and keep that border on there, change the width to, say, 200 pixels. It's now made that box 200 pixels, but look what happens if I pump up my border to some ridiculously large value. Hmm. Now, the content is still 200 pixels, but the border is in addition to that. You see that?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And a lot of times, that's not what you want. For instance, if you get a box in the mail from Amazon.com, or you're going to ship a box, and somebody asks you, what's the size of the box? You don't assume they mean the size of the contents inside the box. You assume they mean the size of the box.
Right.
So to change it to work like that, you can use box sizing, and then you would use the border box. And now, all of a sudden, it includes the size of the border, and it works more the way we would think. Okay?
Cool.
Now, the border, margin, and padding can be specified all together, or you can specify them separately. So let's get these sizings out of here. And let's specify the border left. So I want the border left to be 20 pixels solid green. Now I have a solid green on the left. And if I wanted a little bit of padding to separate that from the contents, but I didn't want that padding to affect all the way around my box, I could use padding left of 20 pixels. And now I've got a little bit of space between my border and my line. And if I wanted a little bit of margin left of that, I could use margin left and just say I want 3 pixels there. Okay?
Cool.
So I've got a lot of control over all my spacing by doing it that way. We've also got the concept of sizing with the box model. You can change the width, change the height. You can also put prefixes on width and height and use min width, min dash width, and min dash height, or max. So you get a lot of control over how big things show up. And HTML does a lot of work for you trying to figure out the best size for things. And so if you use min width and min height, you can give it some parameters. You can give it some constraints. Yeah, I want you to go ahead and feel free to enlarge my text box, but I don't ever want it to get any smaller than, for instance, 80 pixels. So that's the sizing. Finally, we've got control over the visibility of all of these boxes on the screen. We've got display, which is going to control whether things appear or not, or how they actually behave when they appear. Visibility can hide things, but actually keep a placeholder for them. White space can determine how the white space inside of our div is treated. So if we, for instance, want to put some code in there, so when we say carriage return space, 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 we want that to matter, then we can turn on white space recognition as opposed to the default, which ignores it all. And also, a really important concept in Windows 8 development is overflow, what to do with the text that falls out of our text box. And you can specify that you just want to chop it off by specifying hidden, or you want to automatically or manually scroll that content. And we use that a lot in Windows 8 development.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that visibility is controlled for us. Finally, we've got control over the box shadow, much like the text shadow that you were showing us. So we can add box shadows. And we've been doing all kinds of tricks to show box shadows in HTML for years. And same with rounded corners. Welcome to 2012. We've got rounded corners in our HTML. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
Now, it might be important to note here that these sort of embellishments or adornments aren't specifically or generally encouraged in Windows 8 development.
Yes, that's right. In fact, with all the rounded features that some people were so after and all the complexities with using images and all that stuff to make it work, you'll notice that in Windows 8, even in most of the screens, we have that nice crisp-looking box look, so or tile look, so probably not a lot of use for it there.
Yeah, by all means, bring things into your app that make it look good, but don't always have a reason for it. Make sure that it's purposeful. That's the core concept. And then, likewise, the gradients. Gradients are also, you know, should be used with discretion.
Yes.
But you've got really good control over linear and radial gradients. So I remember using all kinds of tricks to do that as well. So we've seen a lot about CSS in a short amount of time, how to select just the right thing, a huge list of properties and what properties are available to us. And if you guys have any questions, feel free to drop those in the Q&A and somebody will get on those. But we're going to go ahead and take a break now, so we hope you'll join us afterwards. And we're looking forward to digging into more CSS in the area of advanced layout.
Yeah, this is fun. Thanks.